Good afternoon. This is the Professor Dr. Ron Daniels, President of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and Distinguished Lecturer Emeritus from York College, City University of New York, welcoming you to this July 25th special edition, I mean very special edition of Vantage Point, here on 99.5 FM, that's WBAI, in collaboration with YCRadio.org. I'm speaking a little faster because we lost a little bit of time because of a little technical glitch really on my end. But we have a very special show today. This show is dedicated to Al Vann, the towering New York and national political leader, who is our newest ancestors. And of course, he was someone who decided he had a disease and decided to discontinue taking his medication because he wanted to control and manage his own transition, which was admirable. Actually, we had hoped to have done this show while he was still with us, but he made his transition to the ancestor realm. And so we are going to invite him into the show anyway, in terms of a living libation. What we're going to do today is we're going to have a special guest who will be joining us shortly. And as I said before, we're going to invite our newest ancestor to join us. And we're going to also ask you and our listening audience to join us with testimonials, to salute with salutes from friends, allies, from our WBAI listening audience. This is a radio testimonial to one of the great leaders of our era. I knew him from way out in Youngstown, Ohio, before I even got here, because of the struggles in Oceanville, Brownsville, the whole emergence of the East with G.T. Weesey, and later on had the pleasure of working with him around the Jackson campaign. And I will never forget in 1990, the year of Malcolm X, him playing an instrumental role in that huge, huge commemorative celebration we had at Abyssinia Baptist Church. He was a towering figure, someone who contributed so much, and we are going to be about the business of listening to that. Now, our guests today are going to be Richard Jones, coming up soon. Richard Jones is the longtime vice president for institutional development and occasional chief of staff for presidents. I got to tell you, he was sort of the glue for Megar Evers College, well-respected by both administrators, the community, and the students for many, many years. Then Adeyemi Bendele, Black United Front, icon in his own right, will be joining us. Then, of course, Esmeralda Simmons, Esquire, attorney. Again, the longtime director of the Center for Law and Justice at Megar Evers College. Phenomenal, phenomenal center there. Important because of the way in which it was supported by political leaders like Al Vann. And then finally, we're going to hear from Don Rojas, the former general manager at WBAI, also now the Director of Communications and International Relations for the Institute of the Black World 21st Century. He reflects on his tenure at the Amsterdam News and all of the news that Al Vann made in that tenure. Now, we're going to invite you to call, and our listening audience, I'm going to give you the number right now. We're not ready for you just yet, but we're going to have plenty of time, 2 hours. It's a radio testimonial. And when you do your testimonial, at the end, you say, Ashe. So we are inviting our ancestor, the honorable, iconic, the great Al Vann, to join us as our youngest ancestor to witness and to be a part of this celebration. You will call 212-209-2877. Let me say that more slowly. 212-209-2877. And between interviews, we're going to invite you to call in and to give your reflections, your remembrances, your testimonials about Al Vann. We're now joined by Richard Jones. Richard Jones is, as I said before, the longtime vice president for institutional development at Megar Evers College. He also has served as chief of staff for some of the presidents of Megar Evers College, but also the treasurer of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century. Richard Jones, welcome to Vantage Point.
Thank you, Dr. Van Daniels. How are you?
I'm doing fine on this occasion. We're going to celebrate, and I thought there was no one better to lead this conversation off than you, because you're so deeply embedded in the Brooklyn community. longtime friend and associate of Al Vann. And so we just wanted to have you share some thoughts. And I guess the first thing I'd like to do is just have you share with our audience what was your relationship to Al Vann? Share a little bit about, was he really from Brooklyn? Was he a native? When did you meet him? Just give us a little bit of that for starters.
Well, before I do that, I just want to give honor to our creator and also to the family who shared Dr. Vann, Al Vann, with us for so many years. I'm really humbled, but that you didn't ask me to do this, because, again, he was a full spectrum of a servant leader, in my opinion. And he is someone that we all cherish for many, many years. As I reflect on my experiences with my friend, my brother, my leader, my mentor, Al Vann, I'm reminded of the words that really was his mantra and always resonated with me. It was a mantra that he and G2, what he used to really share, and that was, is it in the best interest of our people? Anything we do, is it in the best interest of our people? It's a phrase that many of us during the 60s and beyond used, but few were grounded in it so pragmatically, spiritually, and dogmatically as Al Vann. As you get older, you realize that nothing happens by coincidence. And when Nelson Mandela, after spending 27 years in prison as a result of his fight for liberation and against apartheid in South Africa, his first stop in the United States was in Brooklyn, Bed-Stuy.
Wow.
At Boys and Girls High School. It was indeed a recognition that Al Vann was a living leader that encapsulated Mandela's prophetic quote. What counts in life is not the mere fact that we lived it, it is what is the difference that we made in the lives of others that will determine the significance of the life we lead. So, Ron, I wanted to start out with that because Al has been just a living legend for us. He's embodied a poignant message through his life's work. He's devoted to making a difference in the lives of students he taught, teachers he led, government and civic leaders he worked with, elected officials with whom he worked with, mentored, led, and committee members who right. were inspired by him and who he gained sage advice from. Right. And lastly, the institutions he helped build and support.
Right. I was talking to someone just briefly before I came on the air, checking, and I said, I'm doing a show in honor of Al Vann, and the person just exploded with admiration. And they talked about Tish James, and the word that comes up over and over and over again is mentor, mentor, mentor. So obviously, and you've used the term yourself, your mentor, he has mentored so many people. There's so many branches that have just grown from this tall tree in the forest. I'm wondering whether you would also just share with us some thoughts about the relationship, because I've heard them just glow and just hold in such high esteem, Al Vann, Baba Leonard Dunstan, of course, President Emeritus of the National Association of Black Social Workers, and of course, the highest ranking official in the first Cuomo administration, as well as Nana Roslyn Prudhomme, who was his assistant. Would you just share some thoughts about their relationship and how that relationship contributed really to so many organizations getting their start up off the ground here in the state of New York?
Sure, I can do that. But I can also, what I'd like to do with that is to talk about even some of the other mentors that or mentees that came from that tree. But I'll start with Baba Leonard Dunstan, the former commissioner for the Division for Children and Youth and in the New York State. And Dr. Vann, many years ago, my memory is fading, but it was in the 80s. He selected.
All right, so we're back on the air We just experienced a minor power outage here. I don't know, something hit something, and that's why the sudden pew happened here. And I think I got everyone up and ready again to continue on with this program. Dr. Daniels, I'm sorry about what the situation is happening. It seemed like maybe the spirit of Al Van is just letting people know that he's listening or something like that. But
that's good.
That's one way of looking at it. But but Richard is back on, and you can continue on with your program.
All right. Okay, Richard, you were about to talk about the appointment of Bob Leonard Dunson to the commission for, I think you said, youth services and whatever, and moving from there. Yeah, please continue.
He was the commissioner for the Division for Youth, you mentioned Nana Raj Fadam. She was the associate director, associate commissioner for the division. As I mentioned, the division prior to them coming on was one of a punitive system. They were locking up children, young people, in our opinion, minor offenses, and incarcerating them across the state. Commissioner Dunston and Ross Perdome, what they did was to reinvent and to develop a system that was more rehabilitative and one that provided education for youngsters, provided the kind of psychological and social needs, or at least services for these children, so that they could come back into their communities, be responsible, and also to rejoin their family. So it was really a sea change in terms of what that agency and that area of the state was doing at that time.
Right.
We have to commend Commissioner Dunston for really the courage to do what they did at that time. But again, it was Al Van that really gave them the opportunity to do that,
right.
Through his leadership and the Committee for Children and Families,
right,
at the state level.
Yeah. Let me quickly say that at 2016 at the State of the Black World Conference in Newark, we awarded Nana Roslyn Perdome the Pan-African Service Award. And of course, the surprise presenter was none other than Al Van. And man, that was a precious moment, because she just loves Al Van, as does Bob Leonard Dunston, because of the servant leadership, the servant leader he was and is, and his spirit, because the spirit continues. You were going to mention some of the other people who were mentees that you wanted to just give us before we close out this segment.
Yes, I don't. You know, I really don't want to take away the impact that Dr. Van had on the state during that time. Not only was Commissioner Dunston appointed and selected by Assemblyman Van, but also we had Mike Nern, who was his chief of staff, John Latto, Esmeralda Simmons became a commissioner as well in the state, and she'll be speaking a little later about that. There were a number of those who were there. Roger Green obviously became an assembly person, but
right,
he was also a mentee of Al Van. And the list goes on and on with respect to those young people, and we were all young back then. those young people who were really influenced by Dr. Van and Al, as we call them.
All right. Well, Richard Jones, thank you so much for taking on this responsibility and leading us off. I really thought you were the person to best do it, because not only of your deep relationship, but because of the deep relationship that Al Van also had with Medgar Evers College, and the fact that you have played such an instrumental role there at Medgar Evers College. So we thank you so much for spending time with us on Vantage Point today on this memorial radio show for the great Al Van. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Obviously, there are many names and many institutions I could have mentioned, but beyond Medgar Evers College, because again, his broad spectrum of influence and an impact that the man had went far beyond Mega Evers College. Obviously, it impacted on Bedford Stuyvesant Restoration, Boys and Girls High School, the Vanguard Urban Improvement Association, Interfaith. He was very critical in making sure that Interfaith was saved, the impact that he had on Downstate Hospital. And, you know, the list goes on and on.
Right. Okay, well, we appreciate it. We're going to move to our next guest, I guess, in a moment. But I am going to open the phone up just for a second to what we want to do in between testimonials is get audience call-ins. We're going to put the number out, and you can line up, by the way, at any time. So get ready to go 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. But what we're going to do now is go to another icon who had a great relationship with Al Vann, and there's a whole nother series of relationships with this great man, and that is Brother Adeyemi Bandele. So, Brother Adeyemi, welcome to Vantage Point, and welcome to this live memorial radio tribute to one of the great leaders of our time, Albert Vann. We just called him Al Vann. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Professor. It is my pleasure and honor to join in on this occasion to pay tribute to one whom I've always affectionately called just Brother Vann.
Brother Vann.
You are looking at a relationship that began in 1969. I was a high school student and a member of the African American Students Association. Our relationship with ATA, which was the parent body, we all shared a corner building at 1064 Fulton Street, right on the corner of Clawson and Fulton. And Brother Ron, let me tell you something. My memory is absolutely horrendous, but there are some things that just stick out because of their historic importance.
Right.
And Vann and G2 were two, and for your listeners, I'm pretty sure most know when I say G2, but we talk about Baba G2 Weyusi, were both founding members and active with the African American Teachers Association. And at that time, they were in the midst of the struggle for community control in the Ocean Hill-Brownsville area. And so it was a hotbed of activism. And I was blessed, along with my fellow comrades who were students, to have almost like, I guess if you can picture folks riding a wave. Right. I mean, we came in and this thing was moving and we got swept along with it. And it was an absolutely incredible experience. What is interesting to note is while G2 moved in one direction, which was about developing and creating institutions, i.e. the East, and to this date, the International African Arts Festival. And Vann went in the direction of political empowerment. Both of them were engaged, and this is so extremely important, in institution building in their own right.
Right.
And so their legacy for both of them remains to this day. One of the pieces I read by Reverend Daughtry, and he talked about this foursome that came together. And Brother Ron, you know, you're an activist, you're a professor in this, and you understand that when great minds can meet proactively, not in the midst of a crisis, but were able to come together to assess situations, to provide support, to give feedback. And then when the Arthur Miller murder took place, they were poised to create the kind of movement in our community that brought about some degree of justice. Not
right.
all, but there was some degree of justice. And so Vann was, you know, this is so important, man, that people can take their different paths, but can still be connected to the larger issue. And so Van was that. I had occasion, the obituaries and so on. He used to teach up at Vassar. And I was blessed to be among the students who would go with him once a week to his class, and we'd ride with him. You know, an opportunity to share, do a light security, but
yeah, right.
You know, and some companionship for him. And this was an African American studies program up there. So it was, everybody has described him as the gentle giant. Now, most folk wouldn't say that about G2. He was a giant, but he could kick up a storm when he needed to.
Right, right.
But I think that the importance of creation of the institutions that Van touched, first of all, the African American Students and Teachers Association, and then the development of the community empowerment movement. And then in Albany, being very active with the, at that time, it was the Black and Puerto Rican Legislative Caucus. Name has since changed to the Black, Hispanic, and Asian Legislative Caucus. And he was also important in terms of impacting some folks. One of the people that, if you knew Van and knew Vanguard, which was the organization that he developed, he had the capacity, like G2, to surround himself with good people.
Wow.
And that's critical. So he wasn't the, I'm going to do everything kind of thing. He had John Flatow with him. I don't know if you know of John, but...
Oh, yeah,
John,
I do. Brilliant.
Okay, so you know, the only person that I could think of comparable to John was Bill Lynch, and that was... Bill was his mentor. But understanding the importance of people who could strategize, who were serious about their work, and could move the agenda forward. And both he and John and Roger were folks that I was close with and my contemporaries, and just, you know, so much. And then you talk about McGavers College and the realization of creating an institution in our communities that honors a hero, but also is providing the resources for a very pan-African community in that Brooklyn area, between African-Americans, Caribbean, continental Africans. It was something to behold, to see the birth of that from a, I don't know if you know Brooklyn, but it began down on Lafayette Avenue in the Masonic Temple Hall. I mean, that's where it was birthed. You know, almost like the manger, if you will.
Right.
And to see it grow to a world-class facility now. Still needs some work, and they've had some issues with leadership, but it's ours, and we continue to struggle with it.
Right. I wish you would go back a bit, too, because I'm out in Youngstown, Ohio. But I got to tell you that people don't realize the power of that struggle in Oceanville, Brownsville, the whole struggle for community control of education was not just a New York struggle. That resonated all over the country. Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit more about Al Van's engagement in that and the role that G2 played in it and that a little bit more for our audience?
Well, that was, for me, and for that period, say enough is enough. These folks understood that it was now time for us to control the education in our communities. And that meant not just black teachers, by the way, but the economics of it, the purchasing of books. Who benefited from that? Not our community. The selection of administrators. We didn't have jack to do with that. Mm-hmm. And so these folks came together and saw the need to struggle, particularly when this what do they call those things? The community, I think there's a name for, but they were three districts, Oceanville, Brownsville, one up in Harlem, and one down in the Lower East Side, all of which were an attempt to see about communities controlling both the staffing, the curriculum, and the economics of these institutions in our communities, except for high schools. So it only involves elementary and middle schools.
Yes.
And this struggle brought together teachers who understood that they had to now play a role in bringing about a change in the schools. And they also, And this is interesting because as someone who belongs to a union, understood, though, that this particular union was not about serving our communities. And so the UFT became, basically they were like the enemy because right. they felt like we did not have the right to talk about who should be teaching in these schools. What nerve do we have? Well, right. G2, Al Van, and those heroic teachers and students in that era made it clear that, yes, the time had come for us to be engaged and to take a part, play a part in that. And, what's significant, too, is when a movement is supported by a community. So that when we opened up schools, that when the UFT went on strike, the people opened up those schools.
Right.
The people said, no, I ain't doing that. And so Van and G2 took a stand around engaging other teachers who said, yeah, we'll go in and teach our children. And they did that.
Right.
And so it was a critical point in terms of people willing to stand up. And as with any struggle, to deal with the sacrifices where people got fired. I know on the student front, this was so funny, but a lot of our colleagues, they got sent away, and it wasn't in jail. Folks sent them back to Puerto Rico. They sent them down south because they didn't want them getting caught up in this foolishness that we were doing. But it was so important, and it sparked the kind of energy in people that never ended. But what happened was that movement was only a catalyst. Because we stuck out and started the independent school movement. Van stretched out and began the movement to build black political control in our communities.
Right.
And so both of them moved forward out of that catalyst of the struggle for community control.
Right. Earlier, you mentioned that Reverend Daughtry had talked about four people who came together. You mentioned two of them. For the record, it would be great to just know who the other two were.
So that quartet, if you will, with Al Van, Sam Penn, who was at that point head of the Independent Brooklyn Corps, Reverend Daughtry, Pentecostal preacher, Al Van, an elected official, and G2, an educator and activist.
Right.
That
powerful,
grouping,
powerful.
Oh, man. I mean, and I don't think they intentionally strategized it, but each of them had a commitment to building unity in our community, and they realized that it had to begin with them. You can't be sitting in your silo and talking about unity.
Right.
It's an oxymoron. And so they came out, and their ability to share information, to collaborate. Oh, man, it was a phenomenal experience, brother.
Right. And I think that's important. And one of the reasons I wanted to do the show, and again, was because, it'll be in the archives. We're certainly going to present a copy of it to the family. But, it's intergenerationally for people to learn what was and how things can be, because we still, each generation tends to face its own challenges and has to deal with it. And to see, again, that emphasis on servant leadership of a mentor, right? That time it comes up over and over and over again, because not all of these leaders out here are servant leaders. And a lot of them are not necessarily mentors either. But that is what seemed to have embodied Al Van. The whole notion, Richard Jones said, the test was, first and foremost, is it good not for me, but is it good for our community? And that is a tremendous way to look at how to be a servant leader.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's all they did. And, each of them in their own way drew people to them. It's such an amazing thing. It's almost like, when you have a magnet and you have the metal sprinkles around it and you see stuff just draw to it.
Right.
Each one of them, in their own right, had that same capacity. Van, G2, Reverend Daughtry, and Sam Penn had this character about them, that they attracted good people around them who were committed, who wanted to do something. And the important thing was that they were not jerked around by folks, it, meaning the people who were attracted to them, they found meaningful things to do.
Right.
Good. You understand? And that is critical because they're not coming just to be followers. They came and were developed and in many cases found their own identity, purpose, and direction and continue to make their own contributions. I want to raise something with you real quick, LaRon. This whole generational thing, one of the things that is so critical, we just finished our 51st International African Arts Festival.
Right.
And, brother, this year was one of the most rewarding for me. It wasn't financially. We didn't have the great attendance. But for the first year, we have now a new board. And, Brother Ron, at least four of the new members are children who came out of the East and out of the festival.
Man, I know that's gratifying.
Oh, you listen, it gives me chills because they're coming back ready.
That's
you
right.
Hear? Ready. So they come possessing the values, the experiences, because they see what it's like when people can build institutions by working together and having a cultural identity and a sense of direction about empowerment. And these young people have come back and they are, I don't want to say killing it, they're knocking it out the park.
Right.
And it is
great,
such
great.
A gratifying thing. So when you talk about generational, that really struck me.
Right.
And
well, brother, you have certainly played a great role.
You
have played a great role in that as well, because when people talk about the struggles with the East and a lot of these struggles, your name inevitably comes up over and over and over again as someone who has modeled that which you saw in Al Vann and are carrying it out because, you know, again, you just have done so much in order to develop another generation, your family, you know, your progeny and so forth, and the work that continues with the festival and just in general. So you are to be commended for your work as well. And again, thank you so much for taking time out to just share your reflections and your testimonial on the life and legacy of Al Vann. We say Ashe.
Ashe. And I thank you for being a vehicle that allows us to do this. So thank you. And as I'm always saying, stay the course, Professor.
All right. Yes. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. All right. Okay. All right. We're getting there. We had a couple of little glitches there, but that's all right. Nothing is going to turn us around. We're going to go to our listening audience now. I hope people are listening, and we wanted to create this opportunity for our listening audience. Esmeralda Simmons is coming up next, and that's going to be great as well. But we want to open it up to our listening audience, 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. If you have, any of you, remembrances, reflections, tributes that you would like to offer for Al Vann, Brother Al Vann, please call now at 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. I wanted to create an opportunity for the community to respond because he was so much a community person. The whole notion that Richard, this resonates, the whole notion of going to the first and foremost, asking the question, is it good for the community? Many leaders could learn from that now, and certainly our younger generation of leaders certainly, hopefully, will learn about that. It's not about the celebrity. It's not about the camera. It's not about the microphone. It's not about how many clicks you can get and how many what your following can be because you're saying sensational things. At the end of the day, given who we are as Black people and given the crises we face, even as we continue to build and make progress, question is, does it make sense? Is it good for our community? So we invite our community to call in with your testimonies, your tributes at this point, 212-209-2877. Coming up next will be Esmeralda Simmons, but I'm asking you, take the number down and get in line. I see we have a caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point with our radio tribute to Al Vann. You're on the air.
Hey, my name is Cliff Lee. I was at Ocean Hill Brownsville teaching music. And I was very impressed with Al Dan. You know, he was very progressive. And, you know, he was like a, even though I'm about his age, he was like a, I envied him for the work that he did. Right. I had my brother Bill Lee, who's a great bass player. I was teaching the youngsters over there, but I would have him come in and give his expertise there. But Al was a very good person, and I used to see him through the years, you know, particularly at the senior citizen place, because he loved to dance.
Yeah, he did. That's right.
He did a version of himself. Right. But I just wanted to say that I was so sorry to hear for his passing, but he did his work.
Well, let's celebrate because he made the decision that he was ready to make his transition because he...
Yeah, I heard you say that. That's when I first heard about it, when you mentioned that.
Right. Well, I guess the first public reading of it was at the International African Arts Festival. I think Brother Adeyemi, who just we just heard, read it for the community because Al Van wanted the community to know his status. He wanted everybody to know that he had health challenges, that he had made the decision, that he was prepared to make his transition to the ancestor realm. He told us, don't worry about me. I'm going to be fine. Keep up the work. I'm sort of paraphrasing, if you will, but that's the kind of servant leader. That's the kind of towering figure Al Van was and is, because we have him working with us today. We have him among us. Appreciate your testimony, and we say Ashe.
Yeah, Ashe, brother.
All right, let's go to our next caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon. This is Michelle Ellison, and my father, James Monross Jr. on Long Island, was in politics, and he really respected and looked to Al Van to do what he needed to do in Brooklyn, and he trusted him to do that, and he did. And I remember when time came, my father was asked to start to lay the groundwork for the Caribbean U.S. trade agreement, and Al Van was there doing what he needed to do for the people and for the people of Brooklyn. And right. So I just wanted to say that.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in. And we say Ashe because we are celebrating his life Ashe. And legacy. And it's important to have the community come forward and voice their views and their testimonies. Thank you so much for your testimony. Others can call at 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. The life and legacy of Al Van. Our WBAI audience, when I went to the management, I said, can I get an extra hour? They said, certainly. If it's for Al Van, you got it. So that we could have this radio testimonial, this live conversation with friends and allies. And again, we're going to be in the archives. We're going to present it to the family so they, too, can hear these tributes that are coming from all kinds of places, all kind of folks who were touched by this giant of a human being who is in the ancestor realm. He's with us today. We invited him in by way of libation, and we want to continue to have the conversation. 212-209-2877. Let's go back to our listening audience. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon.
You're on the air. Speak up. Speak up a little louder.
Hi, this is Taquana Henderson Rivers, and I was born and I grew up in Brooklyn. I first met Councilmember Van. Well, he was Assemblymember Van then at PS 44 when I was in the fifth grade. He had come to our assembly, and looking at him is what piqued my interest in politics and community work. And so that is the line of work that I went in. I had the distinct pleasure and honor of working with Councilmember Van on the Black Brooklyn Empowerment Conviction. Uh-huh. And the reason why the BBEC was so powerful, at least for me, because it was a demonstration of making sure we continued to have community empowerment, that we continue to have Black leadership on all levels of government, that we continue to put forward a Black agenda. And this particular convention was also very important because it was intergenerational. We had people at the table like Roger Green, like Dr. John Flatto, like Councilmember Van, Annette Robinson, Dr. Louis Blaze Rosado, Esmeralda Simmons, Paul Wooten, at the same table as you had some of us in our 20s doing right. some of the legwork to pull this convention off. And so that convention really formed a strong bond and partnership with my generation and Mr. Van's generation, and it was so impactful on my life. Like, I've never looked at things the same.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling and giving that testimonial. I'm reflecting on it because we had the Gary National Black Political Convention in 1972, and one of the charges was to bring this concept of agenda conferences and Black political agendas to our community. And quite frankly, I think we need to go back and revisit that and start that again, because we've kind of lost that. And so maybe as people reflect on the life and legacy of Al Van, there'll be maybe some people come together and have another series of these Black political conventions. I know the councilman and assemblyman Charles Barron and his wife have tried to do some of those, but I also think it's very important that we do them. Thank you so much for your testimonial. As we say, Ashe. Ashe. All right, 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. Esmeralda Simmons is joining us shortly, but we can squeeze in another call, and we're leaving a lot of space for you in the community, by the way. We got Esmeralda Simmons coming. We got Don Rojas coming next, and then we got a lot of time, so I'm counting on you. I believe you're out there. I know you're out there, so this is your show. This is your time to do a testimonial. At this point. So I don't think we have any additional callers at this point. So again, what we're doing though is giving the number out. I want you to line up, take the number, because we're in between these interviews. We are asking the audience to call in and give these tremendous testimonials about the towering leadership. Towering leadership, tall brother, but humble brother. Someone who didn't speak very loud often, as it was pointed out. Calm, deliberate, but methodical, systematic, strategist. I mean, and inspiring by way of just how he carried himself. And again, I remember interacting with him on many occasions, and I remember the dancing one. I think the last time I was with him, it's been a couple of years now, they were opening up a center over in Brooklyn where a lot of the ceremonies are held. I don't know whether it was a tribute to him or not, but I know that Letitia James was there. I don't know whether she was at that point the attorney general or not, but he came in, and sure enough, you know, he lit up the place and he started to dance. Let's go back to our listening audience. I think we do have another caller with another tribute. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon. This is Ty Johnson. And you just spoke about Tish James, who is one of my political mentors who I worked for many years. And Al Van, you know, as everyone knows, was her political mentor. And, you know, through working with the Attorney General for so many years, I had the privilege of, you know, actually being at a meeting at Al Van's house a few years ago, you know, sitting at the table, his wife preparing a beautiful meal. You know, there was a meeting held in Brooklyn with, you know, electeds from all walks of life. And, you know, it was just a pleasure for me to be there, to be in that room and to just learn so much from him. And it's, you know, a tremendous loss, not only for Brooklyn and for the city, but for the world to lose, you know, such a great man as Al Van. So I just, you know, wanted to say that and was reflecting on my time, you know, that I got to spend with him over the years by working with Tish.
All right. Thank you so much. And we say, Ashe. All right. Okay. We're going to be going shortly to Esmeralda Simmons. It's about time for her, exactly time for her. So I'm sure we'll be reaching out to bring her into the conversation. What a lineup. Richard Jones, Adeyemi Bandele, and now we have coming up Esmeralda Simmons. And boy, she is, my first recollection of meeting Esmeralda Simmons was with four, I hope I don't forget any of them, giant women at a meeting upstate New York that was convened in a sort of, they had a, I don't know, it was a black political gathering or not, that Art Eve used to have up in Buffalo. I think it was outside of Buffalo. Maybe it was in Albany, actually. And I got a chance to meet Esmeralda Simmons. They were on the platform. Regent Dr. Adelaide Sanford, maybe it was just three. And Marta Vega. Whew! You talk about some power. You talk about some bad sisters. I mean, I had the opportunity to see them in action. And of course, they're all formidable in their own right. And of course, Esmeralda, just such a dedicated, skilled, capable, able, devoted to the community. That mantra of, is it good for our people, has certainly, been driving Esmeralda Simmons for a long time. I understand she's now joined us. Esmeralda Simmons, Esquire, welcome to this radio tribute to the great Al Vann. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Daniels. I know I've been calling you Brother Ron forever, so I'll just revert to Brother Ron.
But Brother Ron is just fine.
I'm delighted to be here. I have been listening to the other folks who are providing testimony, and I just am very grateful to you for giving me the opportunity to pay tribute to our leader, Al Vann. If you want to ask me a question first, otherwise
I'll... Yeah, I just wanted to ask, I'm asking people first, kind of, how did you meet Al Vann? How did the relationship shape up? And I want to talk about the impact on Medgar Evers and the impact on that great, incredible center, the Center for Law and Justice. But then there were other centers. I mean, Medgar Evers just emerged as this formidable place. So just sort of take us into the relationship.
I will answer all of those questions, but I just want to be clear that Medgar Evers is just a drop in the bucket in terms of institutions that Al Vann either co-created or created, influenced, saved, or resurrected. And that's only on the educational front.
Right.
It goes beyond that. Healthcare, home ownership, economic development, education, as well as children and family, child welfare, all of those areas he affected. Now, how did I meet Al Vann? I knew of Al Vann because I was a new student in college when, maybe in the middle of my college career, when Ocean Hill-Brownsville struggle emerged, and I followed it very deeply because I had originally wanted to be a public school teacher. And when I saw what was going down with the students and the teachers and the union, I said, I'm not going in there. I said, they're not even serving my people. I'm not going into the public school system. I'll be working in independent schools. But I met Al Vann, I guess it must have been 1978, because I was directly recruited by his chief of staff, a brother by the name of Michael Nairn, who you'll hear about from other people, who asked me if I would join his campaign as a volunteer. Now, understand, 1978, I just got out of law school.
Right.
I just sat for the bar, and I told him, he's a friend of a friend, I told him, listen, Mike, come back after I sit for the bar. I'm not paying any attention to anything. Priorities are priorities. I didn't go to law school to fail the bar because I'm out there running around doing activism. He knew I'd be interested because I was a major student activist in college and in law school. So this was in my blood. This is what I wanted to do. And I had no problem volunteering and using the newly created legal skills for something that I thought was positive. And Al Vann was definitely a positive figure. Now, I got to tell you why he was positive, because that's why we're all on the phone. Al Vann was a black man who went into public office to give black people in Brooklyn, not just Bed-Stuy that he represented, black people in Brooklyn and across the state, a voice. Because I want you to know, before Al Mann led other people to create the Coalition for Community Empowerment, a wraparound roundtable political organization, there were 3/4 of black Brooklyn were represented by white elected officials.
Wow.
And that wasn't by choice for the most part. It was a plantation. We were at best the sharecroppers, and they were in charge. They took all the money that came to the community, gave it to their institutions. Our people had no voice. Our issues were ignored. And they're sitting on top of black voters. Why was that? Because the way the political organization of Brooklyn was run, it was a plantation. The leader of the plantation was Meade Esposito. It was run as if this was a corporation or La Familia. And black folks did not have a role to play in it, except to kiss the ring and go forward and do what they told them to do. So there were some black elected officials. They were not independent. Here comes Al Mann, a child of the Black Power Movement, a son of the Black Power Movement, I can say. Very strong, very pan-African, knows he's an African, is not afraid to say he's an African, is not afraid to say he's in support of the black community, and that we have to rise up straight out of the Ocean Hill Brownsville and say, we are not going to stand for this. We're going to represent ourselves. We're going to get the resources for our communities. And after he finished getting done with the 56th Assembly District and the 57th Assembly District, he decided to call other people together and said, okay, we're going to take over all this other territory where we are. And that's what I joined. It wasn't a man. He was the symbol of an empowerment. Black folks, not too different from what you saw down south in the massive civil rights organizing movement. Not different, of course, it was not an armed struggle, but not at the same time that Namibia, Mozambique were creating their own independence. That's what was going on in Brooklyn. And that's why it was a powerhouse and drew all of these people who were interested in our liberation into working with Al Mann, working with G2, working with Sam Finn, working with Reverend Daughtry. It's all one cabal. It was not a big separation. We were working with all of them. Al was the person that personified statesmanship and selflessness. He was not in it for glory. There was no money.
Right.
So he was only in it for the people. And he was also in it because he wanted to place Bed-Stuy, Black Brooklyn, as a matter of fact, black people across the state of New York, on par with other people in the state of New York, so that we were not second-class citizens in our own state, in our own country. That's what drew me. So I've been working with Al Mann since then. By the way, once you're a lieutenant, you're always a lieutenant. You never get to leave. There is no, okay, I'm retiring or I'm going off for a soldier. No. You get pulled in when you're needed. You get to ask to give your talent when it's necessary. And obviously, if you cannot do it, you can't do it. But there's generally very few reasons why people can't do what he asks them to do. And Al Mann was smart enough to always ask people to volunteer. Ask people to serve. No problem at all. You got to call them out your ass. Yeah, Al called me. That's what we would laugh when he said, Al called me. Because we all knew that work had to be done. And what did we go to school for? What did we get all this knowledge of how their system works, so except to manipulate it for our own people. So that's what I had to say. Michael Mann, I bless him to this day. He was one of the first lieutenants under Al Vann, and when Mario Cuomo was elected, he became undersecretary to the governor, and he moved on to do economic development work and finance work. But all of the finance work was in the public sector. So
right.
I tell you, magnificent brain, great strategist. And of course, I've worked with John Flatow since 1978 to yesterday, when we didn't know how to get off the telephone. And I represented and worked with Roger Green. What a brilliant mind. I brought in Paul Wooten, who then became his counsel, and Paul and I did a tremendous amount of work together. I as a volunteer lawyer, Paul as his counsel, and we also led the legal committee of the Coalition for Community Empowerment, which we brought in dozens of young black attorneys, sometimes screaming and yelling, and other times they couldn't get close enough to us. But I told them they had to serve, and they served, and they loved it. By the way, most of those people have become judges.
Oh, my goodness. That's something.
Oh, yeah. Because once they realized what this was about, they gladly volunteered. The politicians got to know them. When they were looking for people to run for judges, who else did they look at?
Right.
So,
right.
But they never, there was no none of that tit for tat. This was supposed to be service purely for the people, and nobody got anything.
Right,
or expected
right.
to get anything out of it,
right.
except, of course, the satisfaction that our people were served. And I can tell you that we took over dozens of districts through reapportionment and litigating in through the election law.
Right.
So we became black election law experts, we became redistricting experts, and we became voting rights experts. And once
right.
you got that, you could protect people in the political realm.
Right. Well, you certainly have given us a lot, and I appreciate you opening up that window so we really could see that. And Annie Amy talked about it, too. You know, G2 went in one direction around independent educational institutions and cultural institutions, and Al Vann going in the direction of both political and economic institutions, but giving us a window to that plantation and taking over that, saying, no, we're not tolerating this plantation politics. We are going to take these districts and move them and have politicians serve our community. Finally, in that regard, talk to us a bit about the way in which politicians therefore did not support different institutions, because some of it had to do with getting resources, earmarks, or whatever you want to call it, from the state assembly and whatever. Mega Evers is, I suppose, one of those examples, certainly the center that you put together that was such a phenomenal and an incredible center. So just talk to us as we conclude about that, in terms of
yes.
just how fruitful and productive this has been.
So understand that the institutions don't just jump out of the concrete like weeds, okay? They have to be nurtured. They have to be very well thought out. And then they have to be funded. Somebody has to pay for the institution to do what it does. And if it's an institution for the public good, then you have to raise money, because that means that you're a nonprofit. That means you're not selling apples on the street or vacuum cleaners. You know, you're selling good. You're selling services for the community, whether it be legal services or social services or educational or economic development. So what happened? Good. And I'm going to connect your show right now. When Roger Green, who I represented when he was as his election lawyer, was elected for the 57th, his chief of staff was Adiemi Bendel.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, oh yeah. When Adiemi and Roger were visited by a group of radical attorneys, I was one of them, but it included, oh, now I got to remember everybody's names. Oh, my God. Oh, I'm going to be bad at this now.
Don't worry about it. It'll come back to you. Radical
back,
attorneys.
Everybody knows who these people are. You know, they represented Tawana Brawley, the whole deal. We all know. I'm just blanking at the moment. So I joined with three other attorneys. I was the only woman. I rewrote the proposal that they had drafted for a law center to do work on police brutality and other civil rights issues. Tied it in with CUNY Law School. And then we presented that proposal to Mr. Adeyemi Bendele and Roger Green, who then gave us a $500,000 grant through the caucus.
Wow.
Yes.
Yep.
No accident. And I also said I wanted it. I'm the one that said that. I wanted it to be housed at Medgrevers College.
Once
that happened, and we said we wanted it to be housed at Medgrevers College, all the opposition that could come faded away, because now all of the finances of the institution, but people think that black people can't run anything, would be under state control, under city control. It's a public institution. You can't be putting money in your pocket. By the way, there is no money, okay?
Right.
The whole $500,000 has to go to run the center. It doesn't go to the executive director, okay? It's ludicrous. But this was a way to ensure that there would be no hanky-panky, because now it's under CUNY. And I know as a distinguished lecturer, you know that CUNY has so many rules and regulations about finance. You can't even steal a pencil, all right?
That's right.
Matter of fact, you can't even buy a pencil because it's so hard to buy anything with their procurement rules. But anyway, keep going. The brothers advocated with me, and we as the co-founders, it then got to Medgar Evers. The president of Medgar Evers College was the one to decide, after they had a community screening, who would be the executive director. I applied. The other brothers all applied too. Other people applied. I got the job. Now, why did I get the job? I got the job because I had worked in state, federal, and city government as a civil rights attorney. I had been an administrator. I wasn't just somebody that did radical law.
Right.
I knew civil rights laws inside and out. Every
right.
law in existence at that point in time. I wish I could say that right now. But at that point, I was absolutely ready to do this. And it was my dream job to run a community grounded, a community based, not somewhere in Manhattan in a tower, a community based institution, civil rights institution, to deal with our civil rights issues and our human rights issues. And Roger Green, being the brilliant person that he is, he was all over this. So he is our founder, I hope you know. He is our founder. So that's how our center got into creation. Our center was then at the same time, the Caribbean Research Center came into being. Shortly thereafter, the Center for Black Literature came into being. And since then, we've had the Boys Bun Center created, which whose first executive director was none other but John Flateau.
Right.
it sounds like one big circle. That's what it is, one big circle. All of us were working for, I put it like this, less than adequate wages.
Serving the people.
Yeah, we're serving the people. I mean, there were no big salaries. All I asked for coming out of being a commissioner was that they matched the salary I was making as a commissioner. And they matched it minus one penny, okay? I said, I can't take money out of my family's mouth, but I'm willing to do it if you just match the salary. Other people that had my experience, they're making, three figures and all kinds of stuff. I wasn't into that. I just wanted to do the work I wanted to do. And this was the way to do it. And what a ride it has been. We have done tremendous amount of work. I praise the new executive director, Laurie Daniel Favors.
She's
doing
wonderful.
A magnificent job. I know you know her because she's been on your show. And I'm telling you, she's moving in a new direction. Which, new blood, new directions, all good. But I want folks to know that none of this came about by accident.
Right.
And all
right. I let you stretch out a little bit because you were really, really unpacking it, showing the connections and the relationships that it all just flows very well together. We so appreciate you and the testimony you've given. Al Vann as the symbol, someone who personified values and had the system that he pulled together that you joined, not just the man, not just the human being, but the values and the symbol and the systems that was in. I think that's been extraordinarily helpful and useful, and we say Ashe.
Ashe.
All right. Thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, to our listening audience, well, we got Don Rojas coming up in a couple of minutes, but is anybody, well, let's just get the phone number again now. And by the way, now y'all line up. Y'all have heard these great testimonials. Now I got a big block of time, you know, a big block of time for people to call in. And I don't want y'all to wear me out trying to filibuster and pontificate and all that good stuff. So 212-209-2877. Do not hesitate to call and give your tributes and your testimonials. I had hoped and prayed that we could have done this as Brother Al was managing his transition, but you know, the ancestor realm is the ancestor realm, so we have invited him to join us today. We've invited him to join us today to be present on the WBAI radio testimonial. So we want you to testify. We want you to give your reflections, your remembrances, your experiences by calling us at 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Don Rojas is going to join us in a couple of minutes, but we could take another call or two, or at least one call, while we're waiting for Don Rojas to connect. And if not, just line up. I mean, we're going to do this interview, but we're going to, in fact, have plenty of time, you know, for your telephone calls. And I hope you respond, because otherwise you will wear my voice out as I'm trying to continue to repeat the phone call and whatever. So, again, the number is 212-209-2877. Don Rojas is going to be joining us right about now. And, of course, Don Rojas, of course, legendary, the public relations or PR, the press secretary for the late, great Maurice Bishop, People's Revolutionary Government of Grenada, director of Free Speech Television, and, of course, general manager for WBAI. And then, of course, also he was the editor of the New York Amsterdam News, among many, many, many other great plaudits. We want to get his perspective in just a minute as he will join us momentarily. And we understand we now have him on the line, the former general manager at WBAI, as we have this WBAI live radio testimonial to the late, great, but we say late, but not these most recent ancestors. So we've invited him to be a part of the program today. Don Rojas, welcome to your station, WBAI.
Thank you, Brother Ron, and good afternoon to all the listeners. I am just delighted and honored to add my voice to this remarkable radio tribute to the late, great Al Vann, Brother Vann, as I used to refer to him. I first met Al Vann when I was the Brooklyn editor of the New York Amsterdam News. This is way back in the mid to late 1970s. And at that point, the Amsterdam News had established an office, a physical office, in the Bedford Silos and Restoration Complex, which Brother Vann was one of the instrumental leaders to make that happen, to build that wonderful community center in the heart of Brooklyn. What we used to call the People's Republic of Central Brooklyn back in those days. And I met Brother Vann through my relationship with Baba Jitu Weusi of the East, and also Reverend Daughtry, the legendary Reverend Daughtry. And it was in those days that the East, of course, was a pivotal institution in the heart of Brooklyn, as Brother Adeyemi Bandele had pointed out earlier on. But I got to know Brother Vann and to work with him on so many different levels during those years. And I remember him as a very, always available to take my call. You know, as editor, I would call him from time to time and use him as a sounding board, just to tap into his wisdom, his experience. And he was always available to take my call. And and share some of his valuable time with me. As it's been said before, I think in the earlier part of the program, that he was sort of the exemplar of a servant leader. He definitely exhibited those attributes. And as a servant leader, he was a man who was totally dedicated to uplifting the community that he served, not only in Central Brooklyn, but all over New York City, and indeed all over New York State. He provided leadership to his colleagues in the New York State Black and Puerto Rican Caucus in Albany, New York. He was seen and respected as a leader of that caucus. And he was the kind of brother who I found to be a very humble, self-contained leader, and who was able to work very closely with community activists like G2 and like Reverend Daughtry, but also work within the political system. He was able to he chose to struggle for transformational change from within the system. And while working inside of the political system in New York State, he never succumbed to the tendency that many other leaders kind of fall victim to become a centrist, to become a moderate once you're in office. He was always very closely allied with the community and the activist leadership of the community, and in fact took many of their ideas and many of their initiatives into the political system in Albany. He was a man of tremendous integrity, and I believe, Brother Ron, that one of his legacies, perhaps his most important legacy, is his ability to master the inside-outside strategy, so to speak, the ability to work the system from the inside to the advantage of the constituents that he serves. He really was very brilliant in that particular regard. He was, of course, a co-founder of Medgar's College, which is a reflection or a manifestation of the importance of building and empowering community institutions that are sustainable. He believed in that. He saw that activism was about long-term transformation. It wasn't just about winning the most recent battle, but paving the way for systemic change in the long term. And so I believe that he will leave this his legacy of working in such a manner. He will leave to a model, you might say, for today's younger political leadership to study his legislative records, but also to study his approach to strategy and tactics. There's a lot to learn from how Al Vann functioned and how he operated. And when I left New York in the late 1970s, 1979, in fact, to go to Grenada to work for the People's Revolutionary Government of Grenada, headed up by the late great Comrade Maurice Bishop. I remember that Al Vann was very supportive of my move to Grenada, and while we were in Grenada for the four years of the Grenada Revolution, he was supportive from Brooklyn. He was always lifting up the principles and the practices of the Grenada Revolution. So I remain eternally grateful to him for that level of solidarity that he offered to the Grenada Revolution. So we have indeed learned.
One of the things that you're missing, it sounds like And I wouldn't be surprised that if there were not in the conversation at some point the creation of an Al Vann Leadership Institute. It sounds like that would be very apropos for that to happen and to, to take the principles and the values and the history and ideas to train more servant leaders who can go into various fields, be it economic development, political activities, and education, and whatever. We certainly need that model.
Yes, indeed. And I think the time is right for such an institute because we are now witnessing a new generation, a young generation of political leaders coming up to serve. I believe that Al Vann can teach him a lot politics at the level that he operated on was not about a career. You know,
right.
It was not about money. It was not about fame and fortune, but it was about selfless leadership in the interests of in the best interests of the community. So, absolutely, the Al Vann model is one that should be taught and should be lifted up. And there's a whole lot that the younger generation can learn from his example. I agree with that.
As we conclude, I wonder whether I wrote in my notes, and from the vantage point of your being the editor of the Brooklyn branch of the Amsterdam News, I'm wondering whether if you have flashbacks or maybe some highlights of some of the stories that you may have covered in the Amsterdam News based on specific activities, be it Oceanville, Brownsville, be it East. I'm just wondering, do you have any reflections along those lines of stories you may have about Al Vann?
Yeah, indeed. I came to the job of Brooklyn editor a couple of years after the Oceanville Brownsville struggle, but I certainly became knowledgeable about what that struggle was all about and the aftermath of that struggle, produced a range of stories that we worked that I was able to work with Brother Al to flush out. As I said, I would always give him a call to kind of sound him out on this or that, and he was always available to provide his wisdom to me. And, I do recall, for example, we started up in the Brooklyn office because of the large number of Caribbean immigrants that lived in central Brooklyn. We established a full page. We called it the Caribbeat. It was a page devoted to news and views and commentaries from and about the large Caribbean community in central Brooklyn. And I remember Al Vann calling me up one time. He said, "Look, man, this is a wonderful initiative, and you have my fullest support. And let's move forward with it." And every week, in addition to all the other stories that we would publish that were Brooklyn-based in the Amsterdam News, there was this page for and about the Caribbean community in the People's Republic of Central Brooklyn. If there is a community anywhere in New York City and perhaps anywhere around the world that is truly Pan-Africanist in its makeup, it will have to be Bedford-Stuyvesant and Crown Heights, central Brooklyn. Here you have people from all over the Caribbean. Haitian community is a large component. The Jamaican community, the Trinidad and Tobago community, the Barbados community, and on and on. I have some very pleasant memories of working in the heart of Brooklyn. And as I said, we were located at the Bedford Stuyvesant Restoration Complex, which is still there and still performing an invaluable community role. So we were physically in the heart of this Pan-Africanist community, and it was one of the most memorable periods of my journalistic career.
Right. All right. Well, thank you so much, Don Rojas. Amsterdam News, Free Speech Television, University of West Indies, and all that good stuff. And, of course, WBAI as well. We appreciate you taking time out of your very busy schedule as the Director of Communications and International Relations with the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, which we cherish, to do your tribute. And we say Ashe.
Ashe, Ashe. And may Brother Vance rest in peace and power, as we say. Ashe.
Peace and power. That's right. Peace and power. All right. Thank you so much. All right, to our listening audience, there are no more guests. You are the guest. You've heard some incredible testimonials. I didn't know how it would all fit. It all fit very well together. There are some folks out there who are free to call. I didn't get a chance to because I've got a heavy plate of things I'm working on to call Roger Green. But maybe if Roger's out there, he may call us and give his perspective. One of our IBW board members, Ifeah Dawson, Minister Ifeah Dawson, she worked at the East, and she expressed great admiration for Al Vann. Maybe she will call. I know my IBW board chair, Rick Adams, out in Pittsburgh. He also said that he had heard about Al Vann all the way out in Pittsburgh. I had heard about him out in Youngstown. So it was not just local. The Oceanville-Brownsville struggle was national in scope. And of course, you see the manifestation of the Gary Black Political Convention in terms of the kind of institutions that are being built and the way in which it was done, as Esmeralda Simmons did so brilliantly, just outlining it and connecting the dots, as George Frazier would say. So we're looking to have you give us a call at 212-209-2877. You're the guest. 212-209-2877 with your testimonials. Again, 212-209-2877. Well, phones are wide open, wide open. You won't have much of a wait. And if you wait, we'll take them rapidly and quickly or as long as we need to hear these great testimonials, which we also will be turning over. This show will be archived, and we want to make sure that a copy of it gets to Al Vann's wife and family. So we want to make sure that you're all ready to go. 212-209-2877. Let's go to our listening audience for our WBAI radio testimonial to Al Vann. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hello.
Hello. You're on the air.
Hey. Hi. This is Karen Daughtry calling.
I'm so glad you called.
How are you?
I am so glad you called. In fact, I was thinking about you and Reverend Daughtry this morning. I am just like terribly, terribly, insanely busy, and started to pick up the phone and call y'all today because I said they need to be a part of this. But anyway, that's the way the Lord works. So here you are.
I tell you, He works in mysterious ways. I'm at work, but I had intended to tuned in a little late, been calling about 10 minutes trying to get on, but certainly wanted to add my voice to those that have been talking about that great tree, oak tree in our community, the Honorable Albert Vann. And my recollection of our association with him goes back around 1975. I would imagine around that time, Baba G2, Baba Sam Penn, Baba Al, and the Reverend, my husband, who now I've been with him about 60 years. And they would meet monthly for a breakfast, and they would go to each of the houses, and we would have to cook this breakfast, and they would just sit and talk, and sometimes they wouldn't talk, and sometimes they would just look at each other, and then they'd start up a conversation. But over that period of time, they built an amazing trust, and that each one had their particular sphere. Sam, I think, at that time was in charge of Brooklyn Core, and we know Baba G2 was the East, and Al was the educator, but he was also getting into politics. And the Reverend was, of course, the pastor of the historic House of the Lord Church. And so they met. So when Randy Evans was killed in 1976, they were meeting. And then when Robert Torsney was exonerated in 1977, the trust was of such a nature that they were able to move. And part of their conversations had to do with the empowerment of Black Brooklyn. And I appreciated Dr. Esmeralda Simmons' comments and bringing that piece of history to the forefront, because a lot of people don't know that. I also greatly appreciated Brother Adeyemi Bendeli, who was so integral, and Brother Don Rojas. As a matter of fact, this whole Randy Evans, Robert Torsley thing eventuated into us closing down the downtown stores. Mays, Martin's, A&S, they all were had to come to the table because it was in the period when Koch was coming in, and we went to the Brooklyn Museum for his inauguration, and they jumped on the stage and wouldn't let him speak, and Reverend Daughtry grabbed the mic, and so Koch had the meeting with them, and he put McGuire on it, and the next thing we knew, we were having these meetings, and so many institutions, Black Veterans for Social Justice came out of that. The Randy Evans Scholarship, we just celebrated 43 years of giving scholarships in the name of Randolph Evans, which was funded for about 10 years by the downtown community as a result of us shutting down. It was called Black Christmas 77. And so the trust, what I really wanted to add is that there was a model of trust that was built among Black leadership at that time. They each had their sphere. I think they put the Reverend out in the front because he was a preacher, and right. The church was independent, and nobody had to worry. He didn't have to worry about losing his job or whatever the case may be. And if he got shot, he was going to go to heaven. So, you know, we didn't really worry about that. But the point I'm making is that the trust factor that was built was amazing. So they were able to move. There wasn't this jealousy. There wasn't who was going to do what. They all had their place. And he was tall, statuesque, as we all know, very well-dressed, loved to dance, good sense of humor, but quiet and very determined in what he was doing. So those are my recollections. I think that his legacy is one that will stand forever. My husband and I were probably one of the last to see him on the Wednesday before his transition. We knew about the illness and, you know, his letter, and we called and made the appointment, and we visited him about 5 o'clock on Wednesday, the day before just before his transition. I understand that all visitors were stopped on the Thursday, so I'm not sure we might have been the last. But when we went in to see him, he looked up from his bed and tears came into his eyes, and he said, "Wow."
He was talking. How wonderful.
He had good spirits. He was not delirious. He was quite clear, the same Al Van that I knew and had known all of those years. And he said, "Wow." He kept saying, "Wow, y'all." And Herb took his hand and started rubbing his head. And I remember one of the things that Herb said to him is that, "Man, you did it.
Man, oh, my you goodness. Did it."
And Al took his, he grabbed my hand. Herb had him, was patting him on the head and rubbing his head. He grabbed my hand, and then he let it go, and he made his pointer finger in a circle, and he said, "We did it."
Oh,
and
wow.
I cried almost through the whole visit. I had to take a tissue to console myself, because this giant of a man laying there in that bed had his wits about him. He even said to my husband, "You still playing basketball, man? Man, you look great." I mean, he was very clear. That was Wednesday, and I believe he passed sometime early on Friday. We have lost an icon. We have lost a giant. We have lost a man who will never, ever be replaced. Never, ever. I mean, Vida, his influence is all over the place. Mega Evers, Vida, Scholarship, all of that. He was one of the past chairpersons of the Randolph Evans Scholarship Fund. And this year I talked to him about 2 weeks before, because we always do a journal. And I called and I said, "Al, what do you want to put in the journal?" The last journal that we did was 2019, and then the pandemic hit. And he said, "Okay, I'm going to write something." I called him back. I said, "My deadline is coming. What do you want to write?" He said, "You know, I didn't know he was sick." He said, "I don't think I want to write anything." I said, "That's okay. We'll write what was in 2019. A number of us are doing that." He said, "No problem." 2 weeks before, I believe it was the 18th, he called. I called him back. I said, "Are you going to show up? It's going to be on Zoom." He said, "Yeah, I'm going to show up." Then he had Benta to call me and say, "No, I'm not going to show up." I said, "Okay, that's all right." What he wrote in the journal, we read it at the 43rd Randy Evans Scholarship. And that's when we realized Benta told me that he was ill. But man is irreplaceable in our community. And if more of our Black leaders would form the kind of relationship that Baba G2 from the East and Sam Penn, he was a professor and was at the time we met in Brooklyn Core. His wife is a member of our church. And Herb Daughtry and Alvin, if we could get our leaders to put aside foolishness and meet together, not for any particular reason, but just to build trust.
Trust and relationships.
Stop us because we can see the effect of what this coalition did. This eventuated, obviously, into the Black United Front, the local Black United Front and the national, and was one of the first groups to call and congratulate the New Jewels movement upon their liberation or their revolution.
Right.
Adiemi Vandelli was a part of that. And it's so good to hear Adiemi saying that those youngsters are now on the board of the International Arts Festival. So this is such history. We need to, it needs to be written about. We need to have some more institutions with his name on it, street namings and institution namings, because this is something that the Chancellor Williams in his book said, whatever happened to the people of Samurra? I wrote it in my dissertation. The old man said they forgot their history, so they died.
Wow.
We've got to tell this story. If we don't pass the story down, the next generation and the next generation won't know about Alvin. We're having the responsibility to pass this down to our children. Finally, let me say, one of the times we crossed the Brooklyn Bridge, I think we were running after Jimmy Carter because of his stance on human rights. We got to the bridge, the railing at the Brooklyn Bridge. And we were getting ready to go on the bridge, and the police said, you can't go on this bridge. We always walked on the walk on the runway, on the streetway. They said, you can't go. And furthermore, we're going to arrest one of them. So they went and they grabbed Adeyemi's son, Lumumba. Mm. And they put Lumumba. Now, Lumumba was he was grown at that time. But when we started this movement, Lumumba was a child.
Right.
And I remember everybody was, and the police said, nobody can go with him. So they were putting him in the car, and I heard this voice coming behind me saying, I'm going with him. And it was my son who had now become an attorney, Georgetown-trained attorney. And he jumped in the car. The police said, if it's an attorney, he has to go. But these are children that grew up in the movement. And my son used to go to school and we had put a sign on my son. His name's Herb Daughtry Jr. We put a sign on him, which is hanging in my office now, and the sign said, Am I Next? My son was walking in the boycott downtown Brooklyn. He was born in 1969. In 1977, he had this sign on it. He used to be afraid to go to school. He used to put a rock by a tree. He used to put a stone someplace else, and when he came from school, he knew where his rock was because his father was threatened. And I would imagine Al and all of them had the same thing. But as he grew up, he became a lawyer, and he and Lumumba, same age, went in that car to the police station where they arrested Lumumba. So it points up the value of us giving the history to our children and not allowing them to be a piece of somebody that we don't want our children to suffer. Like, let our children understand what this thing is all about, because we're going to be gone.
That's right.
But the legacy that I heard Adeyemi talking about, that's what's important, because those young people are going to take that East thing, that international festival, to another level.
That's
all I have to say. I appreciate Mildred Van for loaning us her husband, Benta and Fola, those children. I know what my children went through, to allow their father to be a part of that movement, because it was many days when Al was not there. Many days, right. G2 and Sam, my family, we did without our father, our husband, because they were a part of this movement. So I thank you, Dr. Oh, my God. I thank God for you, because you have, my grandmother would say, you had the good sense to allow the community to speak up on behalf of this brother, this father, this husband, this uncle that has meant so much to our community. I appreciate. I kept dialing. I said, they're going to hear me today.
I'm so glad you got it in, because like I said, I was thinking, again, I'll call you later and talk about it, because you know, Reverend Daughtry and I, we talk about being in this battle and all that. And I said, I'm staggering, I'm stumbling, I'm in between these different things trying to pull this program off the best I can. But I very much this morning had both of you on my mind. And I'm so glad you called, and particularly as the story unfolded, because some of the story I didn't know. I knew Al Vann by way of Oceanville, Brownsville, because that was a national piece, and then I interacted with him later. But this has been great. It's everything I wanted it to be, because I wanted the radio audience to call, and that way people can hear and we can learn from it. And then obviously we want to turn it over to the family. So thank you so much for calling in.
Thank
I'm going to
get
right back on the line and let some more call us in.
Thank
we're going to say,
so much. I appreciate you.
Ashe. All right. Okay. 212-209-2877. Ooh, that was so wonderful. So wonderful. Oh, so wonderful. Let's go to our next caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point. Good afternoon. You're on the air. I thought we had another caller or two. I guess not.
All right. Try the next one.
All right. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. You're on the air.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So I want to thank you so much for putting this together, number one. We were distressed at the what we felt and wanted in our hearts to be such a bigger acknowledgement of Brother Van's life and work in the community. And so when Esmeralda sent the word out, it was a real joy that it was coming from us and from our own community to do this. And it's also our job to do this. I've heard it so many times that we need to be teaching our own children about our history and the struggle and how to struggle, and that some of that struggle will look like being in the street, and some of it will be looking like sitting in a boardroom, and some of it might look like being in a classroom. And so I had the good fortune of have the good fortune of being friends with Esmeralda and Marjorie, and my husband, who passed many years ago now, worked with Marjorie as well. His name is Charles Jones. And so I just want to say that I was in the Bronx. I lived in the Bronx, and I chose to go to Medgar Evers College for my college experience. And it was what was happening here in Brooklyn that brought me here. It was our band's work. It was all of the activism and all of the consciousness that was so apparent at that point. And it filtered outside of Brooklyn. I was happy to hear people talk about the citywide, statewide influence of what was happening here in Brooklyn. It's easy to just think of it as an Ocean Hill, Brownsville, or Weeksville, or Bed-Stuy issue. This really, the work that was done here reached very far. And I have been in Brooklyn all those many years since then. And so I just really wanted to thank the folks who have spoken already. And I truly appreciate and hope it will take root, Brother Ron, your idea about the Al Van Political Institute for Development and Leadership. And that's probably not exactly what you said, but what you said rang in my heart as a wonderful next step, and not just for college and grad school age, but for our younger people who are having such difficulties dealing and interacting with each other. And so once again, I say ache to the life and legacy of Al Van, and thank you for your hard work and putting this together. And thank you, Karen Daughtry. I loved listening to what you just had to say. It was inspiring, to say the least. So thank you very much.
And Ashe, okay, let's see, can we get a couple more in as our time is fleeting, but we want to continue to hear these wonderful, wonderful tributes. I talked about the Al Van Institute of Leadership Development because it would be good to take the model of his leadership and his thinking and how it came about to exemplify. And Dr. Karen Daughtry talked about this, these four people who came together and how they built that relationship. All that is so incredibly important. 212-209-2877. Let's see, do we have another caller? Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
All right, let's try the another one.
Okay, hello. The people are missing their opportunity. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. This is Martha Bright. And I want to say, first of all, I appreciate the fact that this tribute is going on. And I want to take this opportunity to say that I first met Brother Al Van the fall of 1969 when he was the head of ATA, the inaugural staff of Black News, which was part of the East. We put out the Black News publication in the ATA office in the evening. And I'm also a founding sister of the East Sisterhood. Brother Al did put a wonderful reflection in our book that we put out for the 50th anniversary of the East 3 years ago. I last saw him last year, July 3rd, when we had the plaza renaming for G2, and he was a speaker, and I was a speaker as well. He looked to be the picture of health. So when we got this news in this last week or so that he was terminally ill, we were shocked and devastated. So I wanted to make those comments and reflection and thank him for all of the contributions. The East Sisterhood is putting out a book that will come out by the end of this year. We asked Brother Al Vann if he would write a piece specifically about the African American Students Association. He readily did that, and his piece will be included in our book. Of course, again, we had no idea of the state of his health, but we give him all praises due, as he is now joined our other Brooklyn esteemed ancestors. Ashe, Ashe, Ashe-o.
Ashe, thank you so much. 212-209-2877. Let's see, can we squeeze two more in? 212-209-2877. This has been wonderful, remarkable. Let's go to our next caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point. Please turn your radio down and talk right to us. Yeah, please turn your radio down and speak right to us because we want to squeeze in at least one more caller, okay, you and one more if we can.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes, we can hear you.
Okay, my name is Khadija Bandelli. Now, I'm not sure if I'm repeating some of the stuff that Adeyemi Bandelli said earlier because we were married for several years. But I met Al Vann back in about maybe 67, when he was a member of ATA, that was an African American Teachers Association. And he was a teacher at 35. Then I went on to know him throughout the years. And he was like exceptional. Then like someone just said, the last time I saw him, he was at the street naming ceremony for G2 Wayusi. And he did look strong, but he was a pillar of the community. He will truly be missed. And I just thank him for all that he did. And like I listened to Karen Dorsey talk about my son Lumumba being arrested. And it's just like
ATA, the African American Teachers Association.
Let me move to the next caller because you're listening to yourself in the background, but we appreciate what you said.
Okay, I just wrote down some notes. I want to see if I just touch base on some
but
of the stuff I wanted
to get
say.
One more call in because we're almost out of time. Let's get one more call in. All right, let's see. We have one final caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
None.
Okay, all right. Well, I thought maybe we had one more, and I would have given her a little bit more time, but I also needed to recap. This has been to our WBAI listening audience, and some of you we missed because you didn't pick up the phone at the time that we had it, and we had 2 hours. We thank Berthold Reimers and Linda for granting us this opportunity. It's what we do on WBAI. We wanted to have this radio tribute, this live radio libation to one of the great leaders of our time. And we wanted to do it, too. And what's unfolded is it's a teachable moment in terms of the lessons that we learned as we heard his constant admonition or mantra as a servant leader, that the first priority is it good not for me, myself, and I? Is it good for we, us, and I, our Ujima, collective work and responsibility? Is it good for our community? The commitment to decolonize these institutions that were the plantation that Esmeralda Simmons Dr. Esmeralda Simmons, attorney, talked about, and then systematically doing it. I mean, come on. That is a remark to sit down and plan something and then get it on and actually do it. The commitment to volunteerism and the fact that people were selflessly serving because the leader was selflessly leading. Another important lesson, and that building of those relationships and the cross-generational commitment as well. So much rich information that has been laid out, and I'm sure there'll be street namings and a number of other things that will take place. But the idea of having an Alvan Institute for Leadership Development, it seems to me, is something that would be great because people can come together and plan it and look at the curriculum and the lessons. And we need that cross-generationally to live on, to let the life and legacy of Alvan live on. He lives as long as we utter his name. He lives as long as we do the work. We invited him today to be a part of this program. And as we conclude it, we say we love you. We cherish you. A luta continua, Ashe. This is the Professor Dr. Ron Daniels. You've been listening to a radio tribute to none other than the legendary leader, Alvan, one of the great leaders of our time. And we'll be back here again next week on Vantage Point on 99.5 FM. That's the Pacifica, that's WBAI on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with ycradio.org. We'll see you next week.